Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. I am so grateful that you're here joining me again on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon here on the seacoast of New Hampshire. I had a whirlwind trip to LA to support my favorite dairy cooperative out of Vermont or New England, and it was a grilled cheese invitational, and I can tell you I am still extremely tired and my feet are killing me, but it was fun. It was a fun event, and everyone in LA just was gracious and kind, and the weather was perfect, so it was a great experience and very grateful to have been able to connect with so many wonderful people. Lots of wonderful things happening on Living and Thriving with Rusty. We are booking until August now, so thank you for sending more people to fill up my inbox and drive my personal assistant crazy, because she's got a lot of work ahead of her, I think. Today's show, we have Alan Anderson, who is a speaker and a co-author of books on pets as family members, and I do believe they run their own radio show, Alan and Linda, and so we're going to learn a little bit about what he does and how he utilizes pets in his practice at Angel Animals Network. So I think that's pretty exciting. I think Amy's on.
Yeah.
All right. Good afternoon. Anything that you'd like to announce, Amy?
No, just I'm really happy the sun's out.
Yeah, it's nice. This weather that we're having right now is exactly what we have.
Digging in the dirt already. I loved it. You know, love and hate this time of year when it's like we had a day yesterday when it was dreary and cold. And so what I did is made some nice homemade soup, which kind of helped. And now I have a nice sunny day, so now I'm happy. but I've been digging in the dirt and creating fairy gardens and things like that. So it's been pretty glorious over here.
Very cool. Very cool. So I'm going to pull Alan on because I am really wanting to just get to the point. I'm curious as always, and I have my Cheshire Cat smile on. So good afternoon, Alan. How are you, my friend?
Oh, good afternoon. I'm doing fine.
Great. You are doing a whirlwind tour right now, traveling the East Coast, and so I'm grateful that you were able to make time to be on the show today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's really interesting, isn't it, to travel and to meet so many different people, especially and when you have sort of a message that you want to give out about how beautiful animals are in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So for all of the listeners out there, if you have any questions for Alan, feel free to give a call in, 347-205-9443. And again, you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
I'm Amy.
And Alan, so who are you? What do you do? What inspires you to be who you are and what you do?
Oh, that's a fantastic
No pressure.
Question. My wife and I are authors, and we write and share stories about how animals, pets and animals in nature, have changed people's lives for the better, especially when giving them a viewpoint that they could be better than they are through watching and observing the love of animals. There's so many qualities that animals display each and every day, including, basically the unconditional love, the empathy, the courage, the qualities that we all strive to have more of in our lives, and through their example, we become better human beings. And that's the one thing we did when we started out in the late 90s. We decided we wanted to share stories because stories make a difference. Sometimes stats and books about training and all that help some to some degree, but to change a person's heart means to share a story that affects them in a positive way.
I absolutely agree. I actually took yesterday afternoon to visit my friend who owns a horse, and she just adopted a miniature pony. And my daughter and I helped clean the stalls, so to speak. And it just was invigorating and peaceful and comforting. It was nice. So give us a little bit of an idea of what kinds of stories you share.
Well, we share stories basically. I mean, we have we go through a regular publisher and agent, and we have a publisher that's published over 15 of our books, and they're currently out there. It's just been maybe one or two books a year, and some of the titles are like Angel Dogs, Divine Messengers of Love, Angel Cats, Divine Messengers of Comfort. We have horse books. We have a rescued book about the tragedy and the noble work that animal rescuers did to help during the Katrina crisis and the Gulf Coast crisis during the storms. We have a book about pet loss. So it's been ongoing, year after year, sharing these stories through our newsletter, through the books, through articles and columns that we write in different publications. And what they are is basically, I'm an individual, let's say, and I'm going through life and I'm just doing what I'm doing, maybe raising kids and doing all the things, but there's something missing. So I go to the shelter and I adopt a dog. And that dog, as an example of a story, would be bringing something into my life that's very special, something that's different. And really, the difference is that unconditional love, where I would not have had that had I not adopted and brought that animal into my life, or I had not taken the time to take a nature walk and feel the beauty and the essence of what life can be in a very relaxed environment. We're all so stressed out. So often we don't realize what we're missing out because we're too busy with our daily chores and tasks. And so the stories that we share and we collect and we put out in our newsletter and sometimes share in our books are people that have changed their lives for the better because of a special animal in their lives, or maybe a special time when they were at the ocean or on a nature walk and something. Some would say spiritual, some would say mystical, some would say any number of ways of describing an experience that individuals have. And it turns out that they become better human beings because of that experience. They look at people differently, they give more love, they give more support, they do the things that we all want to do when really it makes a difference. What we do and what we say and how we are towards each other makes a difference, and we are better because of our experiences with animals. So that's kind of our thing. We started out in Minneapolis years ago, 1996, walking around one of the beautiful lakes in Minneapolis, and my wife and I said, I know we're going to have to work the rest of our lives, and that's just a given, but why don't we do something different? Why don't we do something special? We both love animals. We both love to write. We've been writing all our lives. And as we were walking around with our dog at the time, Taylor, people coming by and grinning, said, your dog is smiling. She loves her walks. And they would say, and I would see in their eyes maybe just a little bit of a spark that wasn't there before because they might have been having a bad day, but something that uplifted them just by being in the presence of the walk and the dog. And we thought, well, why don't we ask people, what have they learned from animals? What qualities do they see in animals that they wish they had more of? Like love, like devotion, empathy, courage, all the things that make you more human. And we got hundreds of stories within 60 days. It was amazing. There wasn't really an internet, so to speak, back then. It was a couple of news groups I posted and went to the coffee shops and the grocery stores and posted up posters asking that one question and send us your stories. And we started a printed newsletter, and it went out every couple of months. We had thousands of subscribers worldwide within a year. We went ahead and got an agent and got the first book published, Angel Animals, Exploring Our Spiritual Connection with Animals. And Willard Scott, of all people, got a hold of the book and got up on stage in his Today Show and says, this is a great book about animals, Angel Animals. I really love this book. And when that happened, everything turned around because all of a sudden people began taking notice how special these stories are. And it was a really wonderful start for this whole process we went through with our books and with our outreach, getting people to understand the importance of animals in their lives.
And you are extremely excited about what you do, so I love that. Absolutely love it. So you are a journalist, is that? Am I reading this correctly, you and Linda?
Yeah, we definitely, well, I basically, I have multiple, as I'm sure you do, multiple lives in one. We do different
yep.
things. But I did get a degree in journalism from the university, and I, of course, started working with radio and newspapers at the time. But then I took a turn in my life because of a motorcycle accident, and I, you know, for whatever reason, I kind of looked like Frankenstein for a while. I don't anymore, but I did back then. So I decided I'll use it to my advantage and do something that would give me more material for my writing. So I became a police officer in Atlanta.
And, that's courageous.
So it was really different, and I realized after doing it for a year that I actually liked doing the work and making things better in a situation that often is tragic. So I was actually doing things that made it a better situation than would have been had I not been on that scene of the domestic or on that issue or on that problem or whatever it might have been. So I stayed with it for 8 long years, and then I moved out after doing it for 8 years. But during that process, I remember going to, and this was several times, but I remember one in particular. I would go to this domestic call, and it would be a family, and it would be a very violent type situation. But you know, and then there would be, I remember this little 8-year-old kid on a kind of a dirty green couch with a mixed breed dog next to him, licking his tears and protecting him from all the chaos around him. The dog mm-hmm. was the only adult in the entire place, but it was so much, I took a snapshot of it. I thought to myself, mm-hmm. I really, really want to make this something that people notice. So I remembered that, and of course I did all the appropriate things with the adults and in a way that allowed them to separate and come back when they're cooler heads, when they can discuss things. And I think there were drugs involved, but that was another issue. But I remembered the snapshot. And that very same night I went home and I sat down on the carpet on the next to the couch. You know, I was on the floor. I was so exhausted, and of course police work is very draining. And our dog at the time, a golden retriever, came up to me and melted on my side and just like took mm-hmm. all the stress. Mm-hmm. It was the most beautiful moment. And I was just actually relaxed after a long, hard night. And everyone was asleep. And finally, I, you know, went ahead and went to bed. But it was just something that it occurred to me, I want to write about this. And this is how it started in my mind. And slowly we developed, Linda and I developed a way of getting these type of stories out there to the public.
That's very, very
That's
cool.
Incredible.
So you host a radio show as well. Did I read that correctly?
Would you ask the question again? I'm sorry.
You host a radio show as well. Is that correct?
Oh, no. We've been on plenty of radio shows, and we actually thought we were going to do one at one point, but we never took that leap. It's a very brave individual that takes that leap, and we weren't quite there yet.
It is a brave, it can be a lot, it's an entity within itself, but it's very, it's rewarding. So how can people find you?
Well, angelanimals.net is our website. Of course, we're on Facebook and other social media. We have a Twitter at Angel Animals. And, of course, our new book, A Dog Named Leaf, is more of a memoir about me and Leaf during a crisis that we were both going through, and that also is on Facebook and on social media, and we have a website, adognamedleaf.com. It's a wonderful experience. Most of our books are either written in third person when it comes to explaining or talking about experiences people are having, or anthologies where people are sharing their story in first person, and, of course, they've all given permissions, and they all have given the, mm-hmm. you know, actually look at them all carefully after the edited versions. And we're very careful to make sure everyone is happy, both in the whatever payment we're able to do for them and whatever else they can do to help them become published authors in these books. So we've been working at this for a while, but angelanimals.net is our main website.
And give us tell us a little bit about your new book.
Well, A Dog Named Leaf, I went about a year after our beloved golden, our Labrador retriever died. We decided to go and look and see if there's maybe a pup at the shelter we can adopt. I was kind of still grieving. We were very, very devastated by the death of our dog. But we went to the shelter and we found this little black cocker spaniel about a year old that had been abandoned. on a motorcycle. They called him Harley at the time because that's what he came in on the back door with the camera showing that he'd been abandoned at a shelter. There was no normal intake on the dock. And we basically, through, you know, whatever reasons why these things happen, I'm kind of one that doesn't believe there's a lot of accidents in life. I think there's reasons why things happen, but we adopted him and brought him home. Well, as it turned out, he was a complete mess. He was afraid of people. He didn't like to be touched. He was someone who growled and just basically fearful and didn't like people because he apparently had been abused. We weren't aware of that at the time. Well, right when we adopted him, I found out, of all things, at the office one day after going to the doctor and getting some tests done because I was dizzy, that I had an unruptured brain aneurysm.
Oh,
so,
no.
In a way, it was a shock. I was in total, complete terror of not having my full brain functionality, even with surgery or whatever else needed to happen to take care of the issue. My father had a stroke at a young age, and I remember how much pain he was in constantly because of diminished brain activity. And I had people, when I was doing police work, had brain damage. And I always saw that he always had to be dependent upon other people. And I never wanted that. I always wanted to be independent and strong and capable of doing things for myself. So you got a man who had basically been healthy all his life, and all of a sudden is facing a very deep crisis because, you know, basically we like our brains to be working properly. And we
right.
have a dog that I just adopted who is in crisis all the time, howling all the time, unable to accept love and attention, basically was just in a traumatic state. And so him and I began to bond, of all things, because he saw in me someone who was going through a crisis, and I saw in him someone who needed to learn that people are not all bad, and they truly can be those loving creatures that he would want in his life. So, I mean, I'm kind of going on about it, but I remember when I first found out that I would have to have possible brain surgery, and I would have to have it clipped, and I was going through this crisis. I remember having a meltdown in the hallway of my office, and at that time I was actually doing computer work, software implementation and training. So I had an office in a office building where we lived, and the doctor had called me and told me my situation on the phone. So I was thinking, oh my God, you know, I've actually had an emotional reaction because of my fear of one day becoming dependent on others and not being independently able to do for myself. So I went out in the hallway, and I got on the floor, and I was really, really in crisis, and I was basically going through some self-pity. I think we all have the right to do that once in a while. You know, why is my brain broken? Yeah. So I did that, and I went, and I finally realized to myself, well, you know, I've got to figure this out. I've got to have a plan of action. I've got to tell my wife, for one thing, and in my mind, probably not completely true, but in my mind, she often becomes very emotional over things. So I wanted to make sure that she, if I was going to tell her at all, I would need to tell her in a way that wasn't going to be shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked myself, what would Spock do? And I thought, Spock would do research. Mr. Spock on Star Trek would do research. He would try to figure out what to do in a logical, methodical way about telling Linda also the next steps. The doctor already referred me to a neurosurgeon that was probably the best in the Midwest, and he really was. But I went to my computer at the office, and I typed out and I did research, and all the websites about this particular brain aneurysm were devastating. All the bad stories, all the people, even with successful surgeries, having issues the rest of their lives with pain and issues. Well, I decided to go ahead and write a fact sheet with all the good stuff, all the possibilities, all the options, a one-pager that I would give my wife that evening. So I did all this careful research, and I found only the good stuff and all the success stories and anything else that would allow this ease into this new reality to happen. Well, I typed it up. I was so proud of it. It was a beautiful fact sheet. It helped me, too, because I understood that, you know, there's a little bit more about the whole arena of options.
Mm-hmm.
And that night I gave it to my wife, Linda. And I don't know, she just looked at me after she read it, and she yelled, these are word for word. She said, you have a brain aneurysm, you're going to have brain surgery, and you gave me a memo?
Yeah,
I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, I'm feeling that she probably wasn't too happy at first.
Not at all. She was in shock. This is a typical male way of dealing with things. And I have to tell you, sometimes I wonder if we're all put together correctly because we do things like that. And yet I realized, I said, well, you know, I wasn't even going to tell you. I was going to hope you went to visit your mother in Texas. And then I stopped because I realized that anything else I would have said would have just made it even worse.
Oh, yeah.
So I held her hand, and I realized it was probably not a good idea to write the fact sheet, even though I thought actually it was a nice presentation, but she definitely did not want.
A nice.
So I held her hand, and we sat down, and we talked about all that was at stake and all the different things that might be happening in the future, and I think she cried a little bit, which I can't handle emotion very well, but I did pretty good that day. I was able to comfort her about it, and then we moved forward, and that was it. Now, Leif was there the entire time listening and taking it all in, and he soon began realizing that he had a job to do, and his job was to bring us comfort. And his job was important to him, and he realized that these people are kind and gentle and feed him and pet him and do everything they possibly can to make him happy. So as the days and weeks went by, prior to the surgery, he began more and more to become the individual dog that he was always meant to be. If we had gotten him as a puppy, he would be this way, but he slowly grew and understood that he was loved and everything was safe and he was going to give that love back, and it was very important to us at the time.
Very cool.
Yeah,
how are you feeling now? Whoops,
great. I feel good. They went through the whole process of brain surgery. There were other things that they found that were incorrect and had to be repaired, so things worked out very well. There was one thing, now this is interesting, and I don't know, I think only because I don't believe there's really any accidents in life, this was interesting because I remember prior to surgery I had this incredible nightmare. It was almost like life in the dream. It was so real. And Leif was in the bedroom at the time, and I was thrashing about, but the nightmare had me watching all these people, thousands of people, many of them I knew, many of them I met, some of them I didn't know, going into this massive structure that was sort of moving. I learned it was called the Building of Life, and all these people were going to go in and build the libraries and go to the oceans and the rivers and the forests, and all the architecture was in there. Basically, it was a life. It represented what life was for these people. And all these people were going through there, including Linda and our friends and people that I really do like, and they were just ignoring me and moving forward. It's almost like I didn't exist. But every one of these people going into that building had a ticket, a piece of paper. They had a ticket to be able to gain access. I tried to get into the line, force my way in. Everyone stared at me and said, "You don't have a ticket. You don't belong with us anymore." And I was just shocked, and I was devastated. I woke up in a sweat. And it occurred to me this might be something my subconscious is telling me that I can't accept on the conscious level because I might be, you know, there might be awful things happening here. I might be, you know, disabled. I might be dying, whatever else, because it's a major surgery. And Leif jumped up on the bed. Never did this before because he didn't really want all that hugging. And actually started licking me and letting me pet him. And it was the sweetest thing in the world. Later on that morning, I told Linda about the dream, even though I hesitated, but I want her to be prepared. And she was white. She was just scared because we believe that dreams have, some of them have meaning. We have to interpret them a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And Leif was listening to the whole thing. I kind of raised my hand up, and I didn't have a ticket. My hand was empty. Well, later that morning, as odd as it seemed, he started doing something he had never done before. He went over to the coffee table with his paw and put the papers on the floor and began ripping them up in pieces, small pieces. And then he would put them in his mouth and he'd bring them over to me, and when I wouldn't take them, he would drop them at my feet. And I was so annoyed, he'd do it again and bring over more ripped up papers, newspapers and magazines to me. And it never occurred to me that
he was trying to give you a ticket.
Heard,
yes.
Exactly.
I was thinking the same thing. That's so awesome.
It is just, he was doing all that he could do to help me understand that it was important for me to have that ticket. It was so sweet. And, at the time, I didn't realize the significance of it. I put the papers away, but he was definitely that same day, that later on in the day, after he heard my describing the dream to Linda, trying to bring me something that I needed so badly.
Mm.
So you are in perfect company, because I do not in any way, shape, or form believe in coincidence. I don't believe in... I believe everything, there's a master plan, and everything happens for a reason, even though we don't always understand it. Perfect company there. So talk to us a little bit about... divine messaging and how you and Linda feel that animals give you divine messaging. And I think it's a perfect segue, because that's what we were just talking about in essence. But if you can go a little deeper in that, that would be great.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of your listeners probably understand, because they have animals at home. You know, often scientists would say, it's not proven, this is that, you're anthropomorphic, whatever else they use. And then they go home to their animals, their pets, their animals, their cats and dogs, and they have a totally different viewpoint, because they're talking to a family member, and they're part, it's part of their lives. But in their professional lives, they have to say things like that. When I say divine messengers, when we write about this, it is truly, in my view of things, that something spiritual is happening, something deeper than just our breathing and our thinking and our emotions. Something deep is happening with that animal, either in nature or an animal in your home, happening with that relationship. It is almost like a bond, a soul agreement or some kind, where there's no accidents. You're in my life at this time for a reason. I'm going through these experiences. You're going through these experiences. We're going to work together to become better at who we are, the better individuals that we are. And I truly believe, even though it's a different, completely different category, animals are sentient beings. They're conscious. They're aware. They see, and they do all the things that we do, except in a different way. And we just have to respect that. And this, and often they can read or understand or be messengers from a divinity or a divine element in life that maybe we forget, because we're so busy with all the daily tasks and all of our concerns. And sometimes they bring something to us that we forget exists. And that might be that message of love or comfort or you're not alone or all the things that we tend to kind of forget because we're so mental often. And that's what I really was talking about more with the divine messengers aspect of many of the book titles.
Well, obviously that story validates more for me. I already believe that there's a connection between, you know, animals and people, as well as even plants and people. I mean, we're all interconnected by an energy source. And that's my belief system. And I just love that story, that how would he know unless he understood what you either were saying, or there was some divine connection energetically that he knew what you needed. It's just a beautiful story.
Yeah, and there's so much more as we were bonding and doing things together. It's just a lot of wonderful snippets. There's it just sounds like a sad story, but really it was a very funny, often uplifting story of that process. In some of our books, we wrote a couple of anthologies with horse stories, and I remember this one story that especially touched me is this young girl that was basically very, very sick and very delicate, and she always wanted to ride a horse. And her parents brought her because they wanted her to have her experience, because they didn't really know how much longer life would be for her. But she was determined, and she had that strength of character and determination that often people have when they go through crisis, especially medical crisis, at a young age. And they went to the horse stables, and there's one horse that was completely inappropriate, wild, basically a horse that no one really wanted to ride or be around, because the horse was completely wild and not able to do the things that, you know, a child or an adult would really feel safe with. Well, she went out, and this one horse the one that they would not have recommended, came up to her, ran up to her, stopped right in front of her, and it's more details of the story of how she found herself in a situation nose to face with a horse that, this horse became the gentlest, sweetest thing with her. To the point where it was a total change in behavior and personality because there was something special between those two individuals. And mm-hmm. she actually got to the point where she got on the horse and was able to go around slowly, gently, no bulk, nothing happening that would have caused there to be anything dangerous. And she came back every single week and spent time with that horse. And because of that relationship, she became healthier, stronger, and more able to do and live the life that she'd always wanted to live as she grew year after year. Finally, they actually brought the horse to their home and kept him, and that relationship has been there ever since. But it was a very special moment for a young child who was really having very, very bad physical problems, and there are several diagnosis of different illnesses, but mostly the fact that she was fragile and needed to be, didn't want to be in a bubble or didn't want to be isolated, but wanted to go out and do things at her young age. And this horse who bonded with her just with a glance, and they knew they were meant for each other. And he became the horse that he was always meant to be, and she became a fulfilled, healthier person as she went through life because of that bond in that moment. No accidents, even though it seems to be, it wasn't an accident that those two met.
Right.
I think,
and she
animals
helped him as
have,
much.
Sorry, go ahead.
It seems to me that she helped the animal as much as he helped her.
Exactly. It's a joint decision, a joint agreement. I guess some people might even call it soul agreements. On some level, we don't really understand, but there's an agreement there, and they helped each other.
I think all animals have their people.
Yes.
You know, my Kaya died a couple of years ago of a very fast, incredible cancer. Just filled her body up within a couple of months. It was pretty hard, and I haven't found my other animal yet, and it's been a few years. But she definitely was. She was definitely my dog. You can sense that. Might be articulate at all.
It's very hard when you lose a dear friend like that.
Yeah. But animals, you know, they're used for so many healing.
And that's what they are, dear friends. And a lot of people don't get that. A lot of people look at it. Like, I had a boss that didn't want to give me time off because my dog had to be put down because he was, you know, riddled with cancer. And wouldn't give me the day off, even though I had it approved through other means, you know. And she just didn't get the idea that this dog was part of my family, you know. And I needed time with the animal before, you know, with my dog before I took him. And, you know, but there's other people that so see, like you, that connection that is meant to be, or we wouldn't all be on this beautiful planet together if we weren't to interact with each other.
Absolutely. And that's what we're hoping to do over these years of sharing these stories. If we can just educate people even a little bit where they have a more expanded understanding of that relationship and how important that relationship is. And I think we're making a little progress. I mean, it seems to be better than it was even 5 years ago. I don't know for sure, but there seems to be more people understanding the importance of that family member.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of companies now that allow you to bring your dog to work. There are
I've seen
places that are, yeah, I mean, that's definitely increased, which is wonderful for sure. So what is the one thing that you feel would be most inspirational to other people in regards to the work that you do? What's one message that you want to give away?
The one message that, and you know, it might be a cliche, but maybe not, that you really are not alone, that you are truly loved, and to have that love expressed through a furry friend, or through it could be a feathered friend. It could be, we've had some fascinating love relationships between fish and people and iguanas, mm-hmm. and all that in our story.
Yeah.
You're really not alone. So why not invite that aspect, that individual into your life? And even if you do it in a gentle way, and then just see what happens, because in a way we're all, there's some synchronicity, there's something aspect of life that enters into your life the moment you open that door, and why not open the door and let your life be fuller than it would have been without that other individual, dog, cat, whatever it might be, as part of your life. And the like you said, the learning goes both ways, because no accidents, it might come in the arena of a friend who needs to have an animal or a pet go to a different location because of financial or other problems, or there might be someone at a shelter, or there might be individuals out there at other locations that you're looking at rescue groups that really do need a home, but also you'll know inside of yourself that it's right. And because of your decision and the animal's decision, your life could be so much fuller and so much better. You're never alone unless you close that door, and you don't want to close that door. Keep it open, and at least open it up and look out and see what's available to add to your life. And if you're not available to adopt because you live in a location that doesn't allow animals, go to the shelter and volunteer. I've done that many times over the years, and it's delightful. The animals are there, and they're going to be loving you as much as they love anyone, because they see you as taking care of them in a shelter situation, and you could encourage people to adopt when they come in to adopt. It's all for the good, and it really does make a difference.
Very cool. So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
I'm Amy.
And call in. We have probably about 17 minutes left with Alan from Angel Animal Network. And he's definitely an inspiration, and he has some wonderful things to talk about. The number here is 347-205-9443. So, Alan, what other adventures are you and Linda up to? Do you have a new book coming out? Anything exciting about?
Yeah. We're actually in the process of writing a new book on the animals that are part of our entertainment industry, and basically sharing stories on those animals that may very well entertain us, but also how they're treated and what type of personalities they have, and how they, as dogs and cats, make decisions on which actors they like the better and which ones they don't like, and if they're going to do this or not. They're pretty aggressive in saying, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to sit here, and you're going to have to find someone else to do this. So it's funny, because they're definitely personalities, and some of them are divas, and it's fun to listen to and interview people on some of the stories.
Do you want to give us a little taste of a story?
Well, the one thing, there was a story of a cat in one of the movies that was a star in it. It was just basically a funny little movie with one of the parents would be a cat that was basically learning how to do different things in there. But it was funny how attached this animal got to the actor, and to the point where the actor wanted to adopt, and how sweet it was. And the same with a couple of other movies. Beginnings was one movie where the dog and the main actor just bonded so completely that he just really wanted to spend more time with the dog. But these stories, we're in the process of making sure that they are the ones that would be inspirational and people would enjoy. But it takes effort, as normal. We spend a lot of time interviewing different people and talking to them and making sure that the animals are treated with high regard and respect and all the other things that are important in that industry, as in any other industry. One of the things I thought, I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling that there's sort of a paradigm shift in this country or in the world when it comes to dog lovers. I don't know for sure, but I think if you actually have a great love for a dog or a cat, and the dog or cat has a great love for you, you really do enter into something that might be, we consider, an inner reality of being friends and being able to basically succeed in life where maybe if you were alone would not be able to succeed because you have that as part of who you are because of that relationship. It was kind of funny, on a dog named Leaf, I got some really nice endorsements from Dr. Marty Becker and Jeffrey Masson and some of the other people that were bestsellers on the New York Times bestseller list. But it was one thing that I really did like. Jeffrey is a scientist. He's a PhD. He works with animals, but he also teaches at the university. And he wrote, and this is, I think, kind of getting across to many, many people that have a mental viewpoint but seeing things more open than they used to. He wrote, although I'm not a religious or spiritual person, and he really is not, the more I read, the more my skepticism melted. I am convinced that Leaf's ability to sense what Alan needed, readers will feel as if they know Leaf, and they'll grow to love him too. Now, this is from a PhD who would never endorse necessarily a book that had a spiritual element in it, or that inner element where two individuals work together and become better individuals, both dog and man, because of each other being in their lives at a certain time in their lives. But he and other people, doctors, anybody, everyone that read the book understood that really there's much more to it. And these stories that we get from the Angel Animals Network and the Angel Animals newsletter, these stories, people get it. They experience it. They're no longer embarrassed to talk about it. They're able to say, this is what happened. This made my life better. This made the animal's life better. We truly grew together. And I just like the fact that through the efforts of a lot of us, that stiff, maybe mental, scientific consciousness is being broken into a little bit where it's not necessarily anthropomorphic. It's actually real, and it makes life richer. And I'm kind of getting on a soapbox, so sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's what the whole show is about.
That's what the show is all about.
That's it. The reason for the creation of this show is to inspire people, mind, body, and soul, and this is your passion, and clearly with everything that you're talking about and describing and about the love of your work and how you so deeply connect with animals and understand that other people do, that's inspiring somebody somewhere. So I'm grateful to have you on. Stand on that soapbox and here's a big horn. All right. So we have about 13 minutes left.
There's been a poll out, and it basically asked people, have you ever had a religious or mystical experience? And honestly, I was shocked at the numbers. Over half the people in this country that were polled said yes. It's not no longer a smaller percentage. It's no longer I'm embarrassed to say yes. People are actually saying, yes, I have. This is real. This is who I am. You know, and so you're seeing this growing and more aware consciousness.
Awareness. There's more awareness.
Yeah, more awareness.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't you give us your contact information? We've got about 11 minutes left.
It's Angel Animals Network at angelanimals.net. And you can also subscribe to a free weekly newsletter where we have a brand new story every week that we share. We have books in all the bookstores on Amazon under Alan and Linda Anderson as co-authors. When you go to the website, you can also learn writing guidelines if you want to submit a story for the newsletter or for future books, and also if you needed additional information from us, There's we can either email you or you can look at the various pages and get the data that you would like to see. On Facebook, there's an Angel Animals Network Facebook page. Thousands of people are now like it, and we share stories and share images almost on a daily basis for people. So that would be kind of fun if people are Facebook fans, which seems like there are a lot of people now that are Facebook fans.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Facebook is definitely a place to connect, I think. Sometimes it's a little crazy. They keep changing the format on you, and some of the things Facebook's doing is more frustrating lately. But that's all right. That's a different show.
Yeah.
That's a different show.
Yeah, but it is a good way to reach people.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, that we wouldn't, you know, be able to. But I think what you're doing is wonderful work. And, you know, about this whole evolution of awareness, that's just part of it. And reconnecting to the animal world, because they wouldn't be here with us if we weren't meant to coexist. So I'm really glad that you're doing that work and keep on writing.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, so I'm actually on your website now, and I was looking under events to see if you had anything coming up that you could shout out about, but I don't see any book signings or anything coming up. You must have one. And Leaf looks very cute, by the way.
Well, right now there's nothing scheduled. The book was released in November, and I had 15 events around the country, and I'm actually beginning to go and do a new push to get more book events and more interviews for the book. But I did some traveling to Memphis and did some signings there, and then Nashville and other places. But it's been fun. We had the best time. I had the best time. Have you noticed that people who love animals are really some of the most fun and nicest people that you ever want to meet?
They really are.
Absolutely.
They open their hearts, and that heart, once it's open, can't be closed. Even with somebody who's not having a bad hair day, it's just delightful people.
Mm-hmm. So give us, in the few minutes that we have left, I am noticing that you have talks that you do. You have one animal at a time, pet power, amazing angel animals, pet loss. That one would probably make me cry, so I'll skip that one.
Mm-hmm.
The secrets of bark, meow, and gallop.
Yeah, we do. I do talks. I did one at General Mills that was called "How to Become a Better Human Being." You know, of course, with your pet's help, and they loved it. They came, and I was surprised because there was no actual, other than how to become a better human being, there was no actual benefit when it comes to, you know, people getting whatever benefit they want to when they hear a speaker, but it was very nicely attended and people just loved it. I'm doing another one at General Mills headquarters in January. I do also talks on all those topics, but in the sense when it comes to, let's say, whether it be a rescue group, which basically would be on the book on Rescued, talking about all the experiences there. It was interesting, you know, on that, and I don't know how long we have, but in the rescue book, we talked about, we interviewed a rescuer who was basically doing rescue work down there with a team from an organization, and they went out on the boat, and they saw this big old dog swimming in the muck. This is after the levees broke in New Orleans, and they went towards it, but the dog turned around and swam away, and then it swam towards the house and got toward the house, and the boats heard barking, and the dog, this big old dog, basically wanted the people in the boat to get his girlfriend, according to what they said before they got him in the boat. So the moment the girlfriend, the dog's other companion, got into the boat, the big dog jumped in, and they were both, of course, taken back and saved. But en route back on the boat, one of the rescuers patted the dog, "Good boy," and raised her hand in all in pain because the muck in the water was completely chemical and hot. So the dog was suffering through the entire time, but he wanted to make sure that the other dog, what the rescuers called his girlfriend, was also saved. So you kind of know just from that one experience on his own that there's really a lot of thinking and a lot of strategizing and a lot of this is what I can do to make sure that we're both safe. I mean, there's more going on than we even come close to understanding sometimes, and that was an example of that.
That's wonderful.
And that's the opening in the Rescued Saving Animals from Disaster book, which focuses on the Gulf Coast crisis during Katrina and also focuses on American rescue work that's in this country today. It's a thick book and used in colleges now as textbooks, which is kind of nice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good for you guys. That's so. How do you feel about, you know, stepping back? I'm sure you do every now and then. You and your wife step back and look at what you've created. This dream, this passion has become, you know, probably much bigger than you expected, I would imagine.
It has. And we have to thank our publisher, which is New World Library and Lions Press and Penguin Putman. We had three publishers during this process. They're all just a delightful publishers that saw the vision and really wanted to participate in sharing the book out there. So the book's out there. So that was really nice. It turned out to be bigger. At the same time, there's so much work to be done. You can read the newspaper any day and see all the horrors and all the things that happen based on ignorance and based on people not really, you know, treasuring life and treasuring the beauty of what animals can be if they were treated with love and respect.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. So to end the show, I want to talk about the pet personality quiz that you have on your website. I have not taken it yet. That looks like it could be a lot of fun. So why don't you give us a little bit of the reason behind the pet personality quiz and the thought process and if
well,
I actually
it's strictly
like...
for fun.
Okay.
It's strictly for fun. And the reason why we did this is because sometimes people have certain... maybe attributes, if they mm-hmm. like a particular pet or a particular type of animal. You have it in front of you right now?
I do.
The personality quiz. Yeah. I'm wondering if you could just, let's say someone likes dogs. Why don't you read what their personality is if they like dogs?
The dog, you are honest, loyal, a team player. You forgive easily and are religious and compassionate. You're a great kisser. But, now, was this on Match.com? Just kidding. You're a great kisser, but there is that slobbering issue. Beneath the furry exterior, you hide a big heart and a desire to help others. You wag your tail until somebody pets you. It's not a pretty sight.
Did they just describe us or what?
The slobbering is an issue. I love it.
There's a cat, a horse, and all the others.
Yeah, I'm going to read the fish just for my fish friends out there. Your appetite differences in you appreciate differences in people and lifestyles and are a hopeful person. You're so colorful, charming, and fun to watch that Nemo should be trying to find you. Underneath those scales, you're an optimistic, mellow chicken of the sea. Your motto is, hey, dude, don't take it all so seriously. Go with the flow. I love it.
That's interesting because I would say my brother's a fish person, but there must be another animal. That's not all him.
Poor bro.
He's a multiple animal lover.
So what I appreciate the most about what you and Linda have accomplished with your dream is it's definitely inspirational. It's definitely lighthearted, as we just demonstrated. Great personality. And I love the fact that you were able to take your own personal journey and include that in your work and bond with Leaf, and Leaf had that change. I think animals have a purpose, and I think they have a job, and if the animal isn't doing their job, they're very, very restless and unhappy, just like we are. So he found his job, and that's. I can't wait to read the book. It sounds exciting.
I know, me either.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, he found his job. I appreciate that. It is fun because when you think of it, people need to be uplifted, especially in this world today. And anything we can do to just bring a little more love, a little more compassion, and a little more hope to people, you know, we kind of accomplished our job too, in a way.
Absolutely.
Animals promote laughter, I think, more. Children and animals promote laughter, and we need that. We need that in our life, and to be able to feel carefree in a world that we live in today that it's not always like that. And I believe that what you were saying earlier about animals, people becoming more attached to animals, I see that myself. I'm seeing that happening more.
Yes, yes.
Very cool. Well, I am so grateful, Ellen, that you were able to take time out in the middle of your road trip to chat with us and all of the work that you do. It's really, really cool. So everybody out there, if you're really into animals and you want to hear some inspirational stories, read some, go to Angel Animal Network, angelanimals.net, and check Ellen out and Leaf and Linda and, you know, send them your personal story. I'm sure Ellen doesn't have any on his desk right now and he needs another book. So write a story. And sign up for their blog. It's very cute. And again, very grateful for what you're doing and what you're promoting. And thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. So we're going to wrap up the show a little bit. And next week we have Danny Bader, who is a critically acclaimed speaker. And he has these principles called the Jack Rabbit Principles. That's my little tickler for all of you listeners, because I'm looking forward to speaking to Danny about his philosophy for living a happy life and his five simple principles in doing so. He'll be on the next Humpity Hump next week. Danny Bather. I think that'll be a fun show. He's very lighthearted too. So, again, I wanted to thank Angel Animal Network for being on today. Ellen was wonderful. Linda, hopefully you're listening, so high five to you for all of your hard work and great work. Definitely reach out and check them out. Great stuff. So I will bid you all adieu with love, adoration, and I think you're incredibly beautiful, and I'm so grateful to share this journey with you. Keep bringing in the emails. I love the feedback. Again, the show is created for you, by you. I'm just the messenger. I get to sit back with a Cheshire grin, smile, and ask questions to some really cool people and enjoy the ride. So thank you, and feel free to go to Facebook, as we were talking about earlier, facebook.com/celiacroads. That's me. And talk to you next week. Love you all. Bye.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.